Something from this morning's class? Yes. That was very practical. You scratched yourself in your nose as you're raising a hand, doing two things at once. Very intelligent. Why waste energy? Thank you. Notice how helpful fear is. Terror will make it. Because at the time of death, being confronted with Yamadutas, with their terrible, horrendous appearance and forceful nature, pulling one to hell and then saved. So we can just imagine how grateful Ajamil was. Yes. Yes. Happy ending. Like all Hindi movies have to have a happy ending. Huh? That's what I'm saying. I'm saying that only. What is the point that's most striking to you so far? We've completed two chapters. There's one more chapter to go. What's the point that's most striking? There's the obvious point of just Krishna's name is so powerful. This is something simple like that. But what's most striking for you when you think about it? Ajamil wasn't envious of anyone. That's interesting. Where did you pick up that point? Or how did you pick that up? There was no looking back for him. There was no criticizing the prostitute. There was no this. There was lamentation. But how quickly that lamentation turned to practical action of purification and surrender. Because sometimes when we think about how rotten we are, we end up doing that continuously forever. And we think nothing but how bad we are and how bad we are and how bad we are. And the thought just goes round and round and round and round. And who are we thinking about all the time? That's me. And that is not the kind of lamentation that is purifying at all. That is called being neurotic and crazy. That's the crazy mind. I call that self-indulgent, because you're thinking about yourself only, neurotic behavior. But really, one should do what Ajamil did, lament deeply and then quickly take shelter of Krishna. And that's the difference between humility and low self-esteem. Big point nowadays, even amongst devotees. Humility means acknowledging one's fallen condition and taking shelter of Krishna quite quickly. Not self-indulgently. Do you know that word, self-indulgent? Immersed in oneself. Oh, I am the most, oh me, oh my. Only that. The mind never gets out of thinking about oneself. Self-indulgently. Like a big baby, practically speaking. And we have this all, we tend to have this in us. But humility, on the other hand, brings us very quickly to the shelter of Krishna, because when one acknowledges that one has fallen, then one needs a shelter. That's intelligent. Therefore, after Trinada peace in Ichena Tarota peace, he's now Manina Manadena Kirtaniya Sadahari. The result of recognizing one's fallen condition should be Kirtaniya Sadahari. And that can only come about practically if the materialistic methodology, when one realizes that one is fallen. Of course, they don't think in terms of fallen. But a materialist is trying to make a very strong ahankar or false ego. Because based on that concept of I am very powerful and I am perfect, I will enjoy the world. So to stay in that consciousness, to enjoy the world, but that's a point slightly different from the one I wish to make at this point. So one needs that, a very strong ahankar, feeling about that one is powerful if one wishes to enjoy the world. But I don't know if you've ever noticed this, but the universe does not cooperate with us. Rather than reinforcing our thinking of ourselves as so wonderful, the universe is completely non-cooperative and it conspires to prove to us that we are very fallible, that we make mistakes, and that actually rather than being secure, we are quite insecure. And the business of the mind is to keep reestablishing the strength of the false ego. And that type of a mood, strong self-esteem, etc., will keep one in the material world forever. But rather, when one understands one's fallen condition, rather than trying to reestablish a strong false ego, what one is actually meant to do is just say, Krishna, help. Help me. I am your servant. Somehow I have fallen into this ocean of birth and death. I don't want anything here. I do not want to taste this bitter fruit any longer. I just wish to be established as a speck of dust at your lotus feet as your servant. And then, as Ajamil did, just cling tightly. So the part of this pastime, this very important pastime, it has been brought to a close. But part of it has been brought to a close. Because what happened was Sukadev Goswami was answering Maharaj Prickett's question about the best process of atonement and how powerful bhakti is. And he began explaining the power of bhakti in the pastime of Ajamil, reveals the great power of bhakti by revealing the incredible power of namabhasa chanting. Namabhasa hoite hai sarva papa chai. All sinful reactions finished. So if this, which basically means liberation, is the result of namabhasa chanting, just imagine what the result of shudanam is. Just imagine if one chants with love, if one gets chants just with the dim reflection of Krishna's holy names manifesting, one chants without aparad basically, then the dim reflection of the potency of Krishna manifests, or Krishna manifests a dim reflection of his potency in the holy names, in his holy names. And the result is immediate dissipation of all sinful reactions, which, again, it takes a small portion of the potency of Krishna's names to manifest that, but this in and of itself is far beyond the power of jnana, karma, austerity, or anything else to manifest. And this is just a small semblance of Krishna's holy names, of the actual potency of Krishna as he manifests them in his holy name. So we see Ajamil going from the sinful condition, the most sinful condition, because we have heard from the mouth of the Yamadutas that Sin means going against the Vedic injunctions which engage us in our prescribed duty, which is accurate. And Ajamil was so sinful, committing every sin, practically speaking. So, what was he fear? What was he? When people live their lives, especially people who live their lives sinfully, what is in their consciousness? Basically, they have to be thinking that I will never die, or if I die, it's all over. There is nothing. There is no heaven. There is no hell. Because if one thinks that in any form of a religious judgment, then one will naturally be very careful about how one acts in this world. One will tend to perform pious activities so that one will be benefited and go to heaven, and one will tend to avoid impious, sinful activities, wrong activities, causing pain to others, sinful activities, because that will send one, you know where, to hell. So what does everyone in this world, especially the sinful persons, what does everyone really fear more than anything else? What is fear personified? That expression we've heard Prabhupada say. What does it mean, fear personified, even fears Krishna? What is fear personified? Death. This is the personification, the sum total of all fear, of everything that is terrifying to man, to a woman, anyone identifying with a body. It is terror personified, death, facing death, being everything that one is attached to, ripped from one, slowly, quickly. Everything that one imagines is one's own, but actually isn't, is taken from one. Whatever remains, whatever one has survived with up until old age, it's taken from one at that moment. Terrifying, our attachments ripped away, and no one knows what's next. If this is the sum total of all fear in this world, that which can save us from that fear is a true shelter. Right now, while we're young, while we're healthy, we think, death, yes, we write, you know, death is the most fearful thing. We'll write it down in our notes. But when one is confronted with this, terror tends to enter one's consciousness. Terror, not just I'm afraid, but terror, uncontrolled fear, uncontrollable fear. But that fear vanishes. And this is what Ajamil saw, because he was confronted with death right in front of him. There is that saying, as sure as death. No one can stop death, taxes, and the tide or something like that. Unstoppable is death. What in the Vedic culture, what is one's lifespan measured in? One's breathing, one's breaths. One comes into this world with a certain number of breaths, and then when those breaths are used up, you die. You can't stop it. Whether you're the healthiest person in the world, doesn't make any difference. When it's time to die, you die. But what happened to Ajamil? It was time for him to die, but he didn't die. It was time for him to die, but he didn't die. He defeated death. Not exactly he defeated death, but Krishna defeated his death, but not exactly Krishna or Vishnu defeated his death, who came in the form, because Yamaraj means death. The representatives of Yamaraj, the ones who carry out the orders of Yamaraj, are the Yamadutas. They are death personified. So Vishnu, Lord Vishnu, or Lord Narayan defeated death, but not exactly he, but rather his representatives, the Vishnu Dutas. If we are looking for a shelter in this world, or if we are looking for a shelter in this world or anywhere, this is the standard by which we should measure that shelter to see if it is truly a worthwhile shelter or not. Can it save us from death? This is the standard. How, because death is unstoppable in this world, how powerful is the representative? If the representative of Krishna, the Vishnu Dutas, can save one from death, how powerful is their master? If Namabhasa hoite hai sarva papajai, if a dim reflection of us, semblance of the all-powerful holy names can save one from death, because that's all Ajamil did. And he was calling his son, who was named Narayana. So if that can save one from death, then how powerful is the Lord of that name, or the full manifestation of the holy name of Krishna? These are the considerations. So in the third chapter, we hear what happens in the second strand of this pastime, because we've continued the Ajamil part till he goes back to Godhead, and this was the ultimate result of that Namabhasa chanting. He achieved Vaikuntha, the spiritual world. So how powerful is this? This Lord of the spiritual world, just the mere Abbas chanting of his holy name brings Ajamil there. Now the second strand, because in the 21st chapter, the 21st verse of the second chapter, the Yamadutas left to report what had happened, that death had been stopped. That which is unstoppable had been stopped by some extremely powerful persons, and the Yamadutas were confused. What they considered the principles of religion were proved by the power of the Vishnudutas to be false. And therefore they were confused and bewildered. Never had this happened before. So King Parikit in the first verse said, "O my Lord, O Sukadev Goswami, Yamaraj is the controller of all living entities in terms of their religious and irreligious activities. But his order had been foiled. He's empowered, but his empowerment had been broken. When his servants, the Yamadutas, again, this is in pursuance of the 21st verse of the second chapter. When his servants, the Yamadutas, informed him of their defeat by the Vishnudutas, who had stopped them from arresting Ajamil, what did he reply? Death had been stopped. O great sage, never before has it been heard anywhere that an order from Yamaraj had been baffled. That Yamaraj said, it is now time for you to die. And the person kept on living. It hadn't happened before. Therefore, I can think, Maharaj Prickett said, that people will have doubts about this, that no one but you can eradicate, since that is my firm conviction. Kindly explain the reasons for these events. Sukadeva Goswami replied, my dear king, so he's going to continue explaining or describing what happened when the Yamadutas left. And indeed, they were, in the words of this text, they were baffled because of their being defeated by the order carriers of Vishnu. And therefore they approached their master. What does baffled mean? Do you know? Bewildered. They were bewildered. How has this happened the first time? So they approached their master, the controller of Shamyamani Puri, Yamaraj, the master of sinful persons, to tell him of this incident. They present their case, wanting to understand what had happened in text 4 through 10. The Yamadutas said, our dear Lord, how many controllers or rulers are there in this material world? How many causes are responsible for manifesting the various results of activities performed under the three modes of material nature, sattva-gun, rajagun, and tamagun? Purport. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur says that the Yamadutas, the order carriers of Yamaraj, were so disappointed that they asked their master, almost in great anger, whether there were many masters other than him, because they saw that Yamaraj's order had been stopped. Furthermore, because the Yamadutas had been defeated and their master could not protect them, they were inclined to say that there was no need to serve such a master. If a servant cannot carry out the orders of his master without being defeated, what is the use of serving such a powerless master? They continued, if in this universe, so they're continuing the theme, asking, doubting Yamaraj's position, asking, how has this occurred? If in this universe there are many rulers and justices who disagree about punishment and reward, their contradictory actions will neutralize each other, and no one will be punished or rewarded. In other words, if one master says you should be punished, but another person says, no, you should be rewarded, then no one will be punished or rewarded. Or if the contradictory acts fail to neutralize each other, everyone will have to be both punished and rewarded. Because Yamaraj had ordered he should die and go to hell, Ajamil, for his sinful activities. And the Vishnudutta said, no, he is sinless and should go to the spiritual world. We'll read from just at the end of Prabhupada's purport. Actually, the position of Yamaraj was very awkward in the case of Ajamil, because the Yamadutas were right in attempting to arrest Ajamil, but the Vishnudutas had baffled them. Although Yamaraj, under these circumstances, was accused by both the Vishnudutas and the Yamadutas, he is perfect in administering justice because he's empowered by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore, he will explain what his real position is and how everyone is controlled by the Supreme Controller, the Personality of Godhead. The Yamadutas considered their criticism and complaint. Since there are many different karmis or workers, there may be different judges or rulers to give them justice. But just as one central emperor controls different departmental rulers, there must be one supreme controller to guide all the judges. The supreme judge must be one, not many. It was our understanding that you, Yamaraj, are that supreme judge, and that you have jurisdiction even over the demigods, because even the demigods, although they are demigods, and although Yamaraj is situated more or less at the bottom of the universe or the planets of the universe, still the demigods die. And that means Yamaraj is in control of their fate. Our impression was that you are the master of all living entities, the supreme authority who discriminates between the pious and impious activities of all human beings. But now we see that the punishment ordained under your authority is no longer effective, since your order has been transgressed by four wonderful and perfect persons. We were bringing the most sinful Ajameel towards the hellish planets, following your order, when those beautiful persons from Siddhaloka forcibly cut the knots of the ropes with which we were arresting him. As soon as the sinful Ajameel uttered the name Narayan, these four beautiful men immediately arrived and reassured him, saying, "Do not fear, do not fear. We wish to know about them from your lordship. They wanted to hear about the Vishnudutas because they had seen them with their own eyes. If you think we are able to understand them, kindly describe who they are." Prabhupada's purport. The order carriers of Yamaraj, being very much aggrieved because of their defeat by the four Vishnudutas, wanted to bring them before Yamaraj and, if possible, punish them. Otherwise, they desired to commit suicide. They had never been stopped before. Death had not been thwarted before when authorized by Yamaraj. Before pursuing either course, however, they wanted to know about the Vishnudutas from Yamaraj, who is also omniscient. How is he omniscient? This was described in a previous purport by the grace of the Supersoul. Srila Sukadeva Goswami said, so the next texts, 11 is introductory, and the next sections, actually from 12 to 30, will be the reply of Yamaraj. And we'll read today, Krishna willing, up to text 18, and including text 18. And there is one basic theme in this, and we shall hear about it in a moment. So in text 11, Sukadeva Goswami said, thus having been questioned, Lord Yamaraj, the supreme controller of all living entities, was very pleased with his order carriers because of hearing from them the holy name of Narayan. He remembered the lotus feet of the Lord and began to reply, Smaram pada ambujam hari. He remembered Lord Hari's lotus feet and he began to reply. Purport. Srila Yamaraj, the supreme controller of the living entities in terms of their pious and impious activities, was very pleased with his servants because they had chanted the holy name of Narayan in his dominion. Yamaraj has to deal with men who are all sinful and who can hardly understand Narayan. Consequently, when his order carriers uttered the name of Narayan, he was extremely pleased, for he is also a Vaishnava. And who did he come as during the time of Lord Krishna? And why did he come? Vidura or Yudhisthira? Vidura, Yudhisthira, Vidura, Yudhisthira, both. Huh? And who was Yudhisthira, the son of? Some of Dhammaraj. So why did Yamaraj get cursed? Huh? Mandaka Muni. He was, whether it's fair or unfair, we cannot say. But the Muni thought it was unfair, and he cursed him. You're acting like a Sudra. You take your birth as a Sudra. So he, from a Sudrani. But exalted as he was, he took his birth in the royal palace of the Pandavas. And he was very wise. So Yamaraja's reply begins here. He was happy because this was going to give him an opportunity to glorify Lord Narayan. So they had asked, how has this happened? But specifically they wanted to know about, he wanted to know about the Vishnudutas. But before one can understand the Vishnudutas, one has to understand Lord Vishnu. My dear servants, he said to them, you have accepted me as the Supreme, but factually I am not. Above me and above all the other demigods, including Indra and Chandra, is the one Supreme Master and Controller. The partial manifestations of his personality are Brahma, Vishnu, and Shiva, who are in charge of the creation, maintenance, and annihilation of this universe. He is like the Otaprotam, which means the two threads that form the length and breadth of a woven cloth. The warp and woof, I think it's called in English, some peculiar names for them. There's the threads, huh? Yes, the threads. This way and that way that make up every cloth. Otaprotam. Krishna is the lengthwise thread and the crosswise, breathwise thread. Both. It is the interweaving of these two that make a thread, a cloth. And similarly, it is the interweaving of different aspects of Krishna that make up the entirety of the material world. He is the one Supreme Master and Controller. And he is the controller. So the point he's really ultimately making is that he controls everything, even death. And this is the conclusion of this section. That those who take shelter of him are not under the control of Yamaraj. They are not under the control of death. They are not under the control of their karma even. The good and bad, they are only, simply and only under the control and protection of Krishna. Unless one has knowledge about Krishna, the kind of knowledge that's going to be explained here, and faith in that kind of knowledge, how will one surrender to this Lord? And if one does have this kind of knowledge and faith, then what will stop one from surrendering or moving towards surrender? Desiring to surrender. He is like the two threads that form the length and breadth of a woven cloth. The entire world is controlled by him just as a bull is controlled by a rope in his nose. The bull is so powerful, but is controlled by a young boy he hasn't done it, but the elders have placed the rope through his, made a hole in the nostrils and placed the rope through there, and even a little boy can pull the big powerful bull around once this mechanism is established. So Krishna controls the entire world, and indeed that all-powerful Lord is like a little boy. in Vrindavan. But he's all powerful. But he's controlling the bull of this world. Purport. We'll read the first paragraph. The order carriers of Yamaraj suspected there was a ruler even above Yamaraj. Where did this a similar suspected thing take place? What canto? Yes. He saw Brahma performing austerities to gain power. And he thought, who are these austerities meant to please? If you're trying to please someone, that means there is someone above you. And Brahma didn't take affront at this. He wasn't insulted. But rather he took the opportunity to describe the confirming the Purusha Shukta, how everything is dependent upon Lord Garbhodakshaya Vishnu. So to eradicate their doubts, Yamaraj immediately replied, yes, there is one supreme controller above everything. Because naturally, if we see there's a controller, we want to take shelter of someone, we want to take shelter of the supreme controller, the one who has all the power. Yamaraj is in charge of some of the moving living entities, namely the human beings, but the animals who also move are not under his control. Only human beings have consciousness of right and wrong, and amongst them, only those who perform sinful activities come under the control of Yamaraj. Therefore, though Yamaraj is a controller, he is only a departmental controller of a few living entities. There are other demigods who control many other departments, but above them all is one supreme controller, Krishna. Ishvara Parama Krishna, Siddhananda Vigra, Anadir Adir Govinda. The supreme controller is Krishna. Others who control their own departments in the affairs of the universe are insignificant in comparison to Krishna, the supreme controller. Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Mata parataram nanyat kinchirasti dhananjaya sutre manigina iva protam, same word. My dear Dhananjaya, no one is superior to me, Krishna says. Therefore, Yamaraj immediately cleared away the doubts of his assistants, the Yamadutas, by confirming. They doubted that he was the supreme controller, and he confirmed it. He cleared away their doubts and made it fully clear that yes, indeed, he wasn't the supreme controller. But that doesn't mean there is no supreme controller. That supreme controller is Sarva Karana Karanam Krishna. 13. Just as the driver of a bullock cart ties ropes through the nostrils of his bulls to control them, the Supreme Personality of Godhead binds all men through the ropes of his words in the Vedas, which set forth the names and activities of the distinct orders of human society, Brahmins, Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, and Sudras. In fear, the members of these orders all worship the Supreme Lord by offering him presentations according to their respective activities. Now, what strikes you about this verse? Fear. Fear, okay. Yes, but other than that, where is there... Yes. By?
The names.
Of? The Varnas and Ashrams. Now, who also spoke in a similar way to this? More recently. The Yamadutas. This is what the Yamadutas said. When the Vishnadutas said, define what religion is, this is what they said. The Vedas give forth the activities, prescribed duties for all the members of the Varnas and Ashramas, who are controlled by different varieties of the three modes of material nature. But and that is what Yamaraj is saying. But he's saying specifically that he, the Lord, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he is the one who is binding people in their prescribed duties by speaking in the Vedas. So he's bringing it to the highest step of the speaker of the Vedas, bringing it to the point of the Lord. Well, they didn't do that. They said everyone is following the Vedas. If you don't follow the Vedas, you have to act. And if you follow the Vedas, it's pious. If you don't follow the Vedas, it's impious. But he's, Yamaraj, is bringing in the missing ingredient from the philosophy that the Yamadutas, his order carriers, were speaking. But it's the exact same thing. He is the one who is binding them through the Vedas. We'll read several parts of this purport. In this material world, everyone is conditioned, regardless of who he is. What does conditioned mean? We use that term a lot. What does it mean, conditioned? Raise your hands, because... bound influence. Same thing when we say there are designations, there are limitations. Condition means limited. We are limited by so many varieties of circumstances beyond our control. Whether there's electricity, whether there's no electricity, whether we're sick, whether we're well, whether we're hungry, whether we're tired, the nature of the body that we've been given with its particular type of intelligence and strength and this and that. We are limited, conditioned by this, controlled and conditioned. And really what everyone is longing for is that person who we know we are with all the conditionings removed. So everyone is conditioned, regardless of what he is. One may be a human being, a demigod, or an animal, tree, or plant, but everything is controlled by the laws of nature. Condition means controlled, limited. And behind this natural control is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This is confirmed by Bhagavad Gita 9:10, where Krishna says, Maya Dakshena Prakriti Suyate Sa Chara Charan Hituna Nena Kantaya Jagat Vapiti Vartate. The material nature is working under my direction and producing all moving and non-moving beings. Thus Krishna is behind the natural machine which works under his control. And then skipping a bit. The divisions of varna and ashrama are necessary to ensure the proper execution of duties and peaceful existence for everyone. But everyone is directed to worship the Supreme Lord who is all-pervading. Yena savamidam tatam. The Supreme Lord exists vertically and horizontally, otam protam, and therefore if one follows the Vedic injunctions by worshipping the Supreme Lord according to one's ability, his life will be perfect, as stated in Srimad Bhagavatam. And indeed, that is the purpose of the Vanashrama system. Not just rules and regulations, but to bring us gradually to the point of worshipping the Lord. Yata pravata bhutanam yena savamidam tatam. Atapumbhya dvijatreshtas vanashrama vabhagasa svanustitasya damasya samsadhi haritoshanam. O best amongst the twice born, it is therefore concluded that the highest perfection one can achieve by discharging his prescribed duties, his dharma, according to the caste divisions and order of life, is samsadhi haritoshanam, to please Lord Hari. So that's the perfection of Varnashrama. The Varnashrama institution offers the perfect process for making one eligible to return home back to Godhead, because the aim of every Varna and Ashrama is to please the Supreme Lord. One can please the Lord under the directions of a bona fide spiritual master, and if one does so, his life is perfect. The Supreme Lord is worshipable, and everyone worships him directly or indirectly. This is the business of every devotee, is to know how to please the Lord. how to please his Lord. Those who worship him directly get the results of liberation quickly, whereas the liberation of those who serve him indirectly is delayed. So indirect service means serving the material energy. And that was basically, we can't avoid serving Krishna because he's the Ottam Protam. And this was one of the first questions I asked Prabhupada. I mentioned this recently, yes? I'll say it again because it's so relevant here. I asked, well, if we're serving directly or indirectly, means if we're serving Krishna by serving Maya and we're serving Krishna directly, so we have to serve Krishna, so why bother? Why bother serving him directly? Going through all the trouble of devotional service, the austerities, because it's unavoidable. And Prabhupada's answer was simple. If you serve directly, he says here, you get liberation quickly. And then at that time in Montreal, he told me, you are happy if you serve him directly. And if not, if you serve him indirectly, you're unhappy. Because it's natural to serve him directly. Yamaraj continues, I, Yamaraj, Indra, the king of heaven, Niriti, Varuna, Chandra, the moon god, Agni, Lord Shiva, Pavana, Lord Brahma, Surya, the sun god, Vishvasu, the eight Vasus, the Satyas, the Marats, the Rujas, the Siddhas, Marichi, and the other great rishis, engaged in maintaining the departmental affairs of the universe, as well as the best of the demigods headed by Brihaspati, and the great sages headed by Bhrigu, are all certainly freed from the influence of the two base modes of nature, namely passion and ignorance. So he's explained the Lord, who is all-powerful within this world, and now he's saying, nevertheless, although we are in the mode of goodness, sarvat sanjayate jnanam, still we cannot understand the activities of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. What then is to be said of others who under illusion merely speculate to know God? And therefore, Prabhupada explains in the purport, the Lord personally says no one can understand him but the bhaktas, who are transcendental to all material qualities. Bhakti mam abhijavananti. What's the rest of the verse? Yavanyas chasmi tatvata tato mam tatvato gyat visite mam anantinam. And then Prabhupada adds, not only, this is quite interesting I found, because the point here is unless you're a devotee, regardless of whatever material qualifications you have, you can't know Krishna. But not only can you not know Krishna, nahi yasya karhi chitrajan pumam veda vaditsitam yad vigyasaya yukta muyanti kavayopihi. Bhishmadev says to Yudhisthira Maharaj, O king, no one can know the plan of Lord Krishna. You can't know Krishna, nor can you know his plan. Even though great philosophers inquire exhaustively, they are bewildered. No one, therefore, can understand God by speculative knowledge. 16. So he's saying, first he described the Lord, how powerful he is, and the universe is being led by him, just as the driver of powerful bullocks lead around the bullocks effortlessly by the rope through their nose. And not even the greatest of the departmental heads nor the sages of the universe can know him. And they are situated in goodness, what to speak of others. And yet, in a few cantos, we're going to see this unknowable Lord doing the most amazing things, such as stealing butter, such as milking a bull. I heard Prabhupada, where did we hear that recently? He became bewildered when he saw Srimati Radharani and he milked a bull. Didn't say whether he got any milk out of the bull, but I assume not. He'll do amazing things. Most amazing. More amazing than this holding together the universe by the otam protam. But we better know this first. And we better have reached the conclusion that he is our only shelter. And he can save us from death. And then we should surrender to him fully. And then we can really enter into the most mysterious pastimes of Krishna. Continuing in text 16, how unknowable Krishna is. As the different limbs of the body cannot see the eyes, can your arms see your eyes? No. Thank you, Mother Nisringa Devi. Yes, very good. Similarly, the living entities cannot see the Supreme Lord, who is situated as the Supersoul in everyone's heart. He sees everyone, and no one can see him. Not by the senses, by the mind, by the life air, by the thoughts within the heart, or by the vibration of words can the living entities ascertain the real situation of the Supreme Lord. The real situation of the Supreme Lord. What does that mean? The real situation. What is the real situation of the Supreme Lord? Huh? Huh? Yes, but what does that mean? What is that real situation that no one can... Oh, Nrisinga Devi, yes, you've given away the secret. He's everywhere. But if you know the answer to this, there's some, in Radhastami class, Mahanidhi Swami said that, what did he say? What was his comment about the letter that Krishna sent with the fingernail marks? According to the level of your adhikar, you'll get one understanding or another. But all of them are wonderful. What is the real situation of Krishna? Not by the senses, by the mind, by the life air, by the thoughts within the heart. And who knows the real situation of Krishna? Huh? Maybe Radharani, yeah, maybe. Not by the mind, by the life air, by thoughts within the heart, or by the vibration of words can the living entities ascertain the real situation of the Supreme Lord. That he's in Goloka Vrindavan. But through any ascending process, one is unable to understand. Now, he's described Krishna, the unknowable Krishna, Yamaraj has, to the Yamadutis. Now he's going to really answer his question by describing the Vishnu Dutas. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is self-sufficient and fully independent. He is the master of everyone and everything, including the illusory energy. Let's conceive of what that means. He is the master of everyone and everything. This is just what every conditioned soul is longing for. Just to be the master of, and one other thing, that everyone else will recognize his position. Including he's the master of the illusory energy. He has form, qualities, and features. And similarly, his order carriers, the Vaishnavas, who are very beautiful, possess bodily features, transcendental qualities, and a transcendental nature almost like his. They always wander within this world with full independence. So the Lord is more powerful than Yamaraj is explaining, and his Vishnu Dutta servants are more powerful than the Yamadutas. And then the final verse we'll read. The order carriers of Lord Vishnu, who are worshipped even by the demigods, possess wonderful bodily features exactly like those of Vishnu and are very rarely seen. The Vishnu Dutas protect the devotees of the Lord from the hands of enemies. from envious persons, and even from my jurisdiction, as well as from natural disturbances. So this is wonderful. The devotees of the Lord are protected by these Vishnu Dutas, who are as powerful, practically speaking, or almost as powerful as the Lord. And they wander throughout the world. They protect them from what? Hands of the enemies, from envious persons, from Yamaraj and the Yamadutas, as well as from natural disturbances also. We'll read from part of Prabhupada's purport, starting about halfway down the page, about a quarter of the way, or a third of the purport. Sometimes the members of the Krishna Conscious Society are afraid of the impending danger of world war and ask what would happen to them if a war should occur. I remember one conversation when Prabhupada was in New York City in 1976, where the devotees asked Prabhupada, what will we do in New York City if there's a war? And then Prabhupada said, well, the devotees can all go to, we have a farm in Pennsylvania, Gita Nagari. All the devotees can go there. But the devotees were still afraid. And they said, but then the radiation, if it's a nuclear war, will spread down there and we won't be safe there. And Prabhupada's reply was, what is the problem? We just chant Hare Krishna and go back to Godhead. Something to that effect. In all kinds of dangers, they should be confident of their protection by the Vishnu Dutas, or the Supreme Personality of Godhead, as confirmed in Bhagavad Gita. Kauntaya Patijanihi Name Bhakti Pranasya. What's the beginning of that verse? Shipram. Very quickly they become pious. Dhammatma. Shashva. Shanti. Nagatstuti. Kauntaya Patijanihi Name Bhakti. And what verse does that follow? This is also confirmed in Srimad Bhagavatam. Padam padam yad vipadam natesham. Anyone know the beginning of that verse? Samasritam ye parapalava padam. Canto 10. Lord Brahma's prayers in that chapter. 14th chapter. In this material world, this is for those who have taken shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord. In this material world, there are dangers at every step. But they are not meant for devotees who have fully surrendered unto the lotus feet of the Lord. The pure devotees of Lord Vishnu may rest assured of the Lord's protection. And as long as they are in the material world, they should fully engage in devotional service by preaching the cult of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Lord Krishna, namely the Hare Krishna movement of Krishna consciousness. Very important instruction there. Be a pure devotee means be fully surrendered to Krishna, Janakama, Anavrita. Be surrendered to placing Krishna in the center and acting for his pleasure, and serve at the same time. Both serve by preaching. Not just be surrendered, but that is part of the surrender. Because surrender means placing yourself under Krishna's protection, but it also means serving, acting as the servant. So we've ended one part of the instructions. And in this, these instructions are, if I'm not mistaken, the first mention of the name of what we are doing in Krishna consciousness, and that is the religion that we are following, and that is called Bhagavad Dharma. So Yamaraj will describe briefly Bhagavad Dharma. He'll mention it, which means the activities meant to please the Lord, acting for his pleasure. And that, as we spoke about previously, removes the false ego, because false ego means acting the false sense of me being in the center. So acting to please Krishna means acting as a servant of Krishna, no false ego. And then Prahlad Maharaj is going to explain it even further. Now, yesterday we were reading that the commentary of Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, and what I would like to do is I'll briefly summarize parts that we read yesterday and continue, and hopefully we shall finish. I think we shall, easily. So, the best means to counteract sinful reactions is chanting the holy name. And this is not an exaggeration. This is not an exaggeration, and thinking it is an exaggeration, how powerful Krishna's holy names are, as the smartest, the strict followers of the Vedas, as they think, this is namaparad, offense against the holy name. The name awards its fruits proportionately to how much one takes shelter of him. Offenses prohibit one from taking full shelter. And a quotation from Vishwanath, the name of the personality of Godhead immediately uproots all sinful reactions, even after being chanted just once, but still it usually displays the signs of its fruition only after some delays. And an example, a powerful person gives his protection in various degrees according to how much one taking shelter of him has actually submitted to the shelter of his name. But nonetheless, he's giving protection to all who take shelter of him. And if they commit some offenses against him, it is simply his dissatisfaction with this that is the cause of persons who have taken shelter not getting full protection. And according to the degree that these persons' offenses are eradicated, there is corresponding degree of his satisfaction with them. If all the offenses are eradicated, then there is only satisfaction. Another point of summary. Those who primarily take shelter of karma and jnana and only take shelter of bhakti as a secondary process are not Vaishnavas, and doing this is an offense. Yet bhakti awards them their fruit, their desires due to bhakti's thinking kindly of their partially having taken of her shelter. Bhakti Devi acts in such a way that their sinful reactions are destroyed and that there is no other way for that to occur. There is no other way for sinful reactions to ultimately be destroyed other than bhakti. Furthermore, and now it's speaking about those who commit offenses to the holy name, Vishwanath. Not it is speaking, but Vishwanath. If these persons try to desist from these various offenses, then to the degree that they seriously take to Nam Kirtan and so on, which counteracts the offenses, their offenses against the holy name will subside, and to a corresponding degree they will receive the fruits of their activities. But when by the power of association of saintly devotees their namaparadas become completely eradicated, Bhakti Devi becomes completely satisfied with them, and without a doubt they will attain the fruit of chanting the Lord's name. Another point of summary. Ajamil was treated differently than a Kami by Bhakti Devi, even though he was acting as a Kami, as a Brahmana who was following the Karmakandic Vedas previously, but he wasn't treated as a Kami by Bhakti Devi due to her kindness, and she treated him as a devotee due to his having fallen from the position of a Kami. He wasn't following his prescribed duties. Another point of summary. But since the Vedas allow for considering bhakti secondary, why is it an offense? Vishwanath says, just as when on the strength of Vedic injunctions one attains heaven by performing enjoined violence against sacrificial animals, that fault incurred by that violence is nonetheless not avoided. So also when someone commits an offense while executing a secondary form of bhakti and gets the result of his action, On the strength of scriptural injunctions, still he cannot avoid having accrued that offense. Now, as far as those persons who are offenders against the Lord's name, who take Vaishnava initiation, but by taking Vaishnava initiation, accept a Vaishnava as their guru, they take shelter of Bhakti Devi exclusively, or at least primarily, so changing to devotees who are offenders, but who have taken shelter of a guru, taken initiation, but still they're offenders, but they're taking shelter primarily of devotional service. They can also, and they worship the Lord by Nam Kirtan, but they're offenders. They also can be called Vaishnavas, and they have their offenses eradicated to the degree that their devotion develops, and they experience the manifestation of the real fruits of bhakti to the degree that Bhakti Devi shows her favor on them. So Bhakti Devi is a person, as Krishna is a person. This is said by the Supreme Lord in such statements as, when a diseased eye is treated with medicinal ointment, it gradually recovers its power to see. Similarly, as a conscious living entity cleanses himself of material contamination by hearing and chanting the pious narrations of my glories, he regains his ability to see me, the absolute truth, in my subtle spiritual form. That's from the 11th canto of the Bhagavatam. Devotional service involves perception of the supreme and detachment from material things, also from the 11th canto. We can understand that they undergo the gradual advancement up through the 14 stages, which I hinted at, beginning with the words Srinvatam Sri Katam Krishna Punyashavana Kirtanam. Okay, next section. Thus, when these persons have had all their offenses dispelled, they can attain the Supreme Lord and not have to take birth again. Those who do not commit any offenses, however, experience no delay in attaining the Lord. For them, there are only two stages of development: taking the name of the Personality of Godhead and ascending to Vaikuntha, as in the case of persons like Ajamil. So how dangerous is it to commit offenses? It stands in the way of one's going back to Godhead. But what to do if one has committed offenses? One's still considered a Vaishnava, we heard. And to the degree one eradicates one's offenses, we heard, one attains the fruit of bhakti. Let's hear more. This is stated as, the devotees of Vasudeva never experience any inauspiciousness, nor do they encounter any cause of fear from birth, death, old age, and disease. And a person who executes his occupational duty properly for 100 births becomes qualified to occupy the post of Brahma. And if he becomes more qualified, he can approach Lord Shiva. A person who is directly surrendered to Lord Krishna or Vishnu in unalloyed devotional service is immediately promoted to the spiritual planet. Lord Shiva and other demigods attain these planets after the destruction of this material world. It may be that even for some who have not committed offenses but are not endeavoring to achieve any special form of pure love, there may be a little delay in their attaining the Supreme Lord, as in the case of the King Bharata, who suffered a delay of 3 lifetimes. Moreover, if some amongst those who have committed offenses have not had their old sinful reactions eradicated because of having failed to properly practice worship, and may in addition be performing sins and namaparads, still they do not, after leaving their body, have to go to any hell. Sternly looking at his servants with noose in hand, Yamaraj speaks in his servant's ear, "Leave alone those who are surrendered to Lord Madhusudan. My power is over others, not over Vaishnavas." So this answers the question that, not the question, but there was a comment that sometimes devotees may think, well, there's such a bad result of committing up namaparad, it's better that I don't chant or do anything. But the devotee is so much better off. And we'll hear more about this. Because he never, the one who chants the holy name, he never has to, even if he's acting sinfully, and even if he's an aparadi, still he doesn't have to experience, he's never placed under the control of Yamaraj. Vishwanath continues, we also see this expressed in the statement of the Devadutas in the Magga Mahatmya of the Padma Purana. The brother of Yamuna, that's Yamaraj, has carefully told us again and again, you should stay away from the Vaishnavas, which means whoever worships Vishnu. Continuing, this is an important section. Not that the others are not. And also, according to the Lord's statement, my dear Uddhava, certainly a devotee never suffers even the slightest loss by adopting this process of devotional service. So another direct reply to the doubt of some devotees. There's never a loss. The birth that devotees whose bhakti has begun at all to sprout undergo is necessary only for the sake of allowing that sprout to develop its leaves, flowers, and so on. Because bhakti is eternal by nature. It cannot be suppressed by sins and so on, and is infallible. So what we go through in our life is what Krishna is giving us for the purpose of allowing our bhakti to mature and sprout. And this will be explained gradually. It is not karma. The devotees, he continues, the devotees' birth is not connected with their sins and pious credits, which have become defunct. They no longer exist. This is stated for Vaishnavas. There's no bondage of work and no birth. Therefore, in their subsequent birth, they execute Nama Kirtan and so on, inspired by the remnant effect of their previously performed devotional service. And when finally their sins and offenses are fully eradicated, Bhakti Devi becomes satisfied with them and they attain the personality of Godhead. So rather than not chanting, one should chant, and that will forever carry one forward. Improper emphasis, that philosophical conclusion. That is as stated, my dear Vyas, even though a devotee of Lord Krishna sometimes falls down somehow or other, he certainly does not undergo material existence like others, fruit of workers, etc. Because a person who has once relished the taste of the lotus feet of the Lord can do nothing but remember that ecstasy again and again, from the fifth chapter of the first canto. Here it is said that they don't obtain the material life of enjoying the fruits of piety and sin, as do others, the karmis and so on. Rather, the idea is they obtain a life in the material world involving happiness and distress given to them by the Supreme Lord Himself. This is stated by Shruti, one who knows you does not recognize the distinction of good and bad in the auspicious and inauspiciousness bestowed upon him by the Supreme Lord. For as long as these devotees have not had their namaparads completely dispelled, their remaining sinful reactions continue. But as having already been experienced in the past, and as their devotion increases, they do not repeat their old sins. Their namaparads are dispelled, and at the very moment that all the sin has become destroyed to the root, they obtain the personality of Godhead. Therefore, even Vaishnavas may have to take birth again, once, twice, or three times, to increase their devotion. So, because the force of devotion will dispel everything inauspicious. Yes, but I don't want everyone to become impatient. That's the only problem, and because there's still more. But this is so important. Yes. Excuse me. If it is possible, if you ask Gopi Puranadana Prabhu, because he told me it was a rough translation, and I don't think he wishes rough translations to get out, because then they become accepted as fact as they are. But this will only be is required for the ultimate test. It's not on the test of the, on the canto. So don't worry about it. It's so important. Yes, I'll read slower. But one thing I was thinking when I was doing this is the way around, one easy way around this is just get a copy of the transcript and just hear it. I mean, on the tape or the lecture. The sense, that's one of the reasons I want to read it in. The sense enjoyments that we experience, that we see experienced by these devotees arise from their execution of devotional service, as it is stated. All occupational engagements are certainly meant for ultimate liberation. They should never be performed for material gain. Furthermore, according to sages, one who is engaged in the ultimate occupational service should never use material gain to cultivate sense gratification. Life's desire should never be directed towards sense gratification. One should desire only a healthy life or self-preservation. From Bhagavatam 1:2-9-10. Please listen. The devotees may suffer some miseries, but these are given them to them by the personality of Godhead, who is expert in increasing his devotees' devotion. Just as a doctor may make his patient drink bitter purgative medicine to help increase the patient's appetite. This is as the Lord says, when I especially favor someone, I gradually take away his assets. Bhagavatam 10:88-8. The results of some namaparad are particularly persistent, since amongst the 10 namaparads, some can destroy the very fact of one's being a Vaishnava. Namely, and here they are, imagining the glories of the Lord's name to be an exaggeration, concocting some meaning of the names, and equating their chanting with pious activities. And among the offenses, other than these, there are two which are very severe. Offense against great devotees and indulging in sinful behavior on the strength of the Lord's name. We are warned of the particular danger of these two in the words, if one is known to have committed this offense, how can he ever tolerate the shame? And when someone develops a proclivity to sin on the strength of the Lord's name, there is no way regulative observances can purify him. There is no other way to counteract these offenses than to suffer the appropriate misery and at the same time continue constantly chanting the Lord's name. The other namaparads, however, are counteracted simply by constant chanting of the Lord's name. Am I doing better now? Okay, sorry. And those persons who are offenders against the Lord's name, but who have no tendency of karma, jnana, and so on, are engaged in performing devotional service by hearing, chanting, and so on. Now the topic changes. Yet have not received initiation because they have not taken shelter at the lotus feet of a guru. What about them? They also should be called by the name Vaishnava. Indeed, the word Vaishnava can be understood as derived by the sutra of Panini's grammar, Shashya Devataha, that is his deity or Vishnu, or else by the sutra that reads Bhakti, That is his object of devotion. Thus those who by their initiation have made Vishnu their deity, and also those who by their practice of worship have made Vishnu their object of worship, even if they're not initiated, are both called Vaishnavas, since there is no other term to properly describe them. For these Vaishnavas also, as for the ones described before, there is no fall into hell and so on, such is the opinion of some. But this opinion is not very cogent or intelligent, since it is said in the verse beginning Nri Deham Adyam that the Guru is the pilot of the ship. They cannot easily obtain the Supreme Lord without a Guru. Therefore it is said that only for those saintly persons who in a previous lifetime had achieved the shelter of the feet of a Guru can merely by the power of their worship obtain the personality of Godhead. One cannot otherwise obtain the Supreme Lord just by his devotion. We're on the last page now. We see that even Ajamil, now the case of Ajamil, who hadn't taken shelter of a guru, easily obtained the Supreme Lord. So this should be explained as follows. Those who, like cows and asses, simply graze their senses on objects of sense of gratification and have no idea, even in their dream, of who is God, what is devotion, what is a guru, can, like Ajamil and others who uttered the name of Lord Hari, be saved by bhakti alone, even without a guru, by the method of Namabasa and what it involves. Lord Hari alone is the proper object of worship. Devotional worship is the means of obtaining him. The guru is the proper person to give instruction about these matters. And in the past, it was devotees instructed by gurus alone who obtained Lord Hari. Even if one can make these specific discriminations, he may adopt the viewpoint of such scriptural evidence as the statement, there is no need to pay any regard to initiation, proper rituals being performed, or preliminary purification. This mantra consisting of the names of Sri Krishna bears fruit simply by touching one's tongue. And take the example of Ajamil and others like him to decide, why do I have to take the trouble of accepting a guru? I can expect to obtain the Supreme Lord simply by Nam Kirtan and other devotional practices. But then, so he's making that some people are sort of innocent and don't know anything, they don't know have any discrimination, and they chant, and these people like Ajamil can be delivered, but those who are clever and are thinking to avoid taking a spiritual master and just perform their devotion, these are the two in this particular case. Then, because of the grievous offense, the latter, the ones who are avoiding taking shelter of a guru, namely those of disregarding the guru, he cannot obtain the Supreme Lord. Rather, only when in the same life or in the next life his offense is dispelled, can he take shelter of a divine spiritual master and obtain the Lord. And the final section. And these are more varieties of cases. Some say that the situation of the sins and offenses of devotees of other gods is like that of the karmis. Others say that the demigod worshippers belong to yet lower categories because they do not in the same way as the karmis take actual shelter of bhakti devi as a secondary process. This is as stated, those who are devotees of other gods and who worship them with faith actually worship only me, O son of Kunti, but they do so in a wrong way. I am the only enjoyer and master of all sacrifices. Therefore, those who do not recognize my true transcendental nature fall down. Bhagavad Gita 9:23, 9:24. For those, however, who are purely offenders, there is no deliverance. As it is said, those who are envious and mischievous, who are the lowest amongst men, are perpetually cast into the ocean of material existence, into various demoniac species of life. Attaining repeated birth amongst the species of demoniac life, O Son of Kunti, such persons can never approach me. Gradually they sink down to the most abominable type of existence. Bhagavad Gita 16:19-20. And for special cases amongst these, such as Kamsa, some say that they're being obsessed with the personality of Godhead. By that, their namaparads are dispelled and they achieve liberation, as is verified by such statements as many persons have attained liberation simply by thinking of Krishna with great attention and giving up sinful activities. This great attention may be due to lusty desires, inimical feelings, fear, affection, or devotional service. I shall now explain how one receives Krishna's mercy simply by concentrating one's mind upon him, from Bhagavatam 7:130. Yet, others say that the words, the Lord's names by themselves remove sinful reaction, is a partial reference implying that this power also belongs to meditation and so on, and thus this obsession means constantly repeated meditation. And others say that this rule is broken when Krishna descends to the earth, since some who are not even obsessed with him, like Naraka and Bana and the soldiers in the Kaurava army and other military opponents, obtain Krishna on the strength of being killed by his hand or even just by having seen him, as have been stated before. That's a long comment by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, but very significant. Perhaps the most significant parts of the comment for those taking to devotional service are the parts that Prabhupada has extracted out and put in his comment at the end of the last chapter, because those explain how a devotee will manifest his devotion and the result of devotional service gradually as his namaparads disappear. But we should all make the endeavor to remove whatever namaparads we have committed. And I know very well the results of namaparads are very, very sad. I know from much first-hand experience of this. So we should be very careful about namaparads and not commit them. And whatever ones we have, we should try our best to have committed. We should try our best to remove. And what is the process that was stated of removing them? Constant chanting. But also in Harinam Chintamani, these subjects are discussed further by Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Should I ask? I'll ask Gopi Pranadana if he, I'll ask him. Because obviously I've done something very unfair. Sorry. Accuracy. You can have a readable translation that's wrong also. So without, I'm not going to put the slightest bit of pressure on him saying, you know, please do this or anything. I'll just, because I want him to be satisfied. And let's see what he says. Class is over, but I wanted to say, because it's getting dark earlier now, that it seems appropriate to start and end the class a half hour earlier, starting on Monday. And I hope everyone knows that there's no class tomorrow, so we're back to 4 days a week, but Monday to Thursday. But that would mean that class on Monday would be at 4 o'clock, not 4:30, and it would end at 6 o'clock, not 6:30. Is that preferable for everyone too? Anyone have any objection, difficulty? Okay, so please be on time, because for souls, fallen souls such as myself, the more devotees who attend the kirtan. So nice. Thank you. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Gaura Bhaktivinoda ki jai.